You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Of all of the images to come out of the Women's March, some of the most memorable were a very funny sign. Signs like, "I've seen smarter cabinets at IKEA," "So bad even introverts are here," and the tongue-twisting, super callous, fragile, racist, sexist, Nazi POTUS. Humor can be a powerful form of protest, and judging from the responses of late-night TV show hosts to the news of the past week, we can expect lots of political and social humor in the coming months, perhaps years. People who feel under attack often use humor as a way of defending themselves. So in 2010, the comedian Dean Obadalla created the Big Brown Comedy Hour, a recurring show that features Middle Eastern, South Asian, and Muslim comics. The latest version, called The Last Show Before Trump Deports Us, was sold out when it was presented on January 15th. And I'm very pleased to welcome Dean Obadalla to our show now, along with Maysoon Zaid, co-executive producer of the New York Arab American Comedy Festival, and Adir Yaqub, producer of the Shady Pines Comedy Hour. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
To the two who are of you who are in studio, were you vetted before you were allowed to come into our building?
Extreme vetting. It was a lot of pat down, which is nice. I like human contact.
I was asked a lot of questions about my religious beliefs. I made it here.
Did you go to any of the Women's March events in D.C., New York, or elsewhere?
Unfortunately, I wasn't there in person, but I was cheering along from my couch.
I was covering it on SiriusXM Radio Live, but I was up here in New York. But certainly it was a day that I think inspired so many progressives who felt depressed and despondent. And it was a day that I think, even as comedians, it's the kind of day that gives you hope. You know, like, you can go forward. Because sometimes as a comedian, it's even hard during the time of Trump. I mean, our community, the Muslim community, is actually afraid, but at the same time resilient. So this combination, we're not cowering.
Because the signs covered a wide range of things, but they included issues that would have been of concern to you.
Sure.
Do you remember where you were and what you were thinking the first time Donald Trump said that he would ban Muslims from entering the United States?
Well, I was probably hanging. This is Maysoon. I was probably hanging out with my cat because that's pretty much what I do all the time. But I remember thinking, this clown will never win. And now I just continuously think, oh, my God, this clown won. And it's really interesting what's happening right now with the countries that he's choosing to target in his immigration, you know, reform. Because not only are they Muslim, but he's also heavily targeting black Muslim countries. So it's a lot worse than just bigotry. It's like the perfect storm of bigotry, racism, and ignorance.
It's been pointed out that none of the predominantly Muslim countries he's done business with are on this new list.
Yeah, that's amazing. I wrote about it for the Daily Beast. You know, Turkey's had over 15 terror attacks just last year alone, many by ISIS, but Trump's got the Twin Towers, his own Twin Towers. Nothing there. So if you're on a list like Sudan or Somalia, let Trump open a hotel. Maybe he'll get you off the list. It's about finance. I mean, the same thing UAE. There have been people joining ISIS from there. Trump's got a massive, huge golf course there. He can't ban his business partners. It's just not going to happen.
The 9/11 attackers were from mostly Saudi Arabia and Egypt. They're not on the list.
Yep.
The San Bernardino shooting was from somebody from Pakistan. That's not on the list.
No.
Well, Donald Trump can't actually ban Saudi because, first of all, he is Muslim, and he also identifies strongly with them because he enjoys oppressing women.
You're saying that Donald Trump is a Muslim?
I think
we'll have two Muslim presidents in a row. This is really Sharia law is taking hold. He's reinforcing it, and we're really, you know, proud to say he's one of us.
See, yeah. Leonard, we can help because he doesn't drink alcohol. And he's had three wives, so he's got to be Muslim.
Yeah.
So let's start it from here, from the Leonard Lopate Show out to the world. Donald Trump, a Muslim. I haven't seen his birth certificate. He could have been born in a Muslim country as well. We just don't know. People are saying, right?
So
we don't know.
Yeah,
I was thinking about his insistence on using the phrase radical Islamic terrorism and the criticism that President Obama experienced from many Republicans because he wouldn't use those words. Radical Islamic terrorist, is that okay with you because it means that not all Muslims are terrorists, only the crazy radical ones?
Well, I think when it comes to terrorists who are Muslim, they always specify that they are Muslim. They don't call it terrorism, and they don't call terrorists terrorists unless they're Muslim. No one says radicalized Christian terrorist. So whenever a terrorist is ever mentioned, it's always a Muslim. It's never any other kind of faith, and their faith is never the subject of the reason that the terrorist attack happened.
I think Trump using radical Islam now is a step up from him saying Islam hates us.
Yeah.
You know, the big gradation of demonization. President Obama was so thoughtful and strategic, understanding that if you combine Islam with this, with ISIS all the time, that's what ISIS wants. It helps them say we're representing ISIS. It also helps demonize American Muslims, and that's what ISIS wants too, because in their sales pitch that the West hates you resonates. So at this point, radical Islam, after all the stuff Trump has said about Muslims, it's meaningless talking point by them. Like, it changes our way we're going to fight ISIS. We're not going to change the way we fight by saying that.
When the Murrah office building was bombed in Oklahoma City, the immediate reaction was that Muslims had done it. Mm-hmm. But they didn't later say white nationalist terrorists did the bombing.
No.
They didn't say Dylann Roof, white terrorist.
He was truly a terrorist. He wanted to start a race war. Yeah. He had a political agenda. I'm a former lawyer. That's the basis. That's terrorism defined. And there are people out there. Glennon Scott Crawford, just sentenced in December. Most people don't know his name. What was he? He was a white terrorist who plotted to kill Muslims in upstate New York. Got 30 years to life. Robert Dargett's about to go on trial in Tennessee. A Christian minister for what? The plotting to kill Muslims. William Seeley, a self-professed Trump supporter, sentenced to 90 days in jail. For what? Plotting to kill Muslims. The media does not report on terrorists. There's no breaking headlines. The Wolf Blitzer is not activated when a Christian or a non-Muslim does something, but a Muslim does it, and it's wall to wall. And it's not just CNN. All of them do that. It's ratings bait.
I'm speaking. Go ahead.
And it's that false image that we keep seeing that, like, you know, if you curb Muslim terrorism, then no one's ever going to be mass shot again. And ignoring the fact, like Dean said, that the majority of these people are not Muslim, and that we always assume that the Muslim's motivation is religious. Like, there's never a chance that the Muslim just happens to be Muslim by name and is angry at his coworker, or his ex-girlfriend, or God knows what else. It's always assumed that it's tied to religion. We're never allowed to commit any action without it being tied to Islam. And so I don't think that it's this radical thing that he said, radical Islam, because like Dean said, it really is one of the nicer things he's ever said about us.
I'm speaking with Dean Abdallah, Maysoon Zayid, and Atiyah Yaqub, three comics who are trying to find some humor in the current situation. Journalists report an uptick in harassment online over the last few months. Are Muslim comedians also experiencing that? That sounded like a bitter laugh.
It is a bitter laugh because I was talking about this on Dean's show. Dean has a show too, and I was on his show and I was talking about this, and we were talking about how I get different like threats and trolls than Dean does. My people always follow up. They threaten to kill me if I come to their state. They threaten sexual violence against me, which is something that women across the board online are facing. But I've had a huge, huge uptick in people who tell me, you know, leave the country or you're better off dead post the RNC than I ever did before in my life. But it's something that's been happening since I started being on the internet. So yes, there's been a spike in it, definitely, but it's something that I'm extremely used to as a woman online.
The hijab seemed to really rile some people up, and there was a report in today's Times of a man attacking a JFK airport worker yesterday because she was wearing a hijab.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Athea.
No, I was just saying, unfortunately, that since Trump even, you know, started running for president, there have been a huge rise on attacks on Muslims. Anyone who even appears Muslim, even Sikh population people can't even distinguish if they're Muslim or whatever. They're like, okay, they're wearing a turban. They're wearing something on their head. I don't like it. This is not, you know, something that Trump would approve of, quote unquote. But
Sikhs have nothing to do with this.
No, they don't. But unfortunately, they've had to take a lot of the rap for us. You know,
there's been a lot of wearing turban. This is why. I'll tell you, this is not breaking news to anyone. A lot of Trump supporters are angry.
Right.
So they're angry at a lot of things. One is the economy and different things. One is they scapegoat and they think Muslims somehow they tell me and Maysoon go back to our country, which is New Jersey. And she still lives there. I live in New York. I'm going to go back to Jersey. But they are angry about a lot of things. So they see a Muslim, and somehow in their mind, their life will be made better if you demonize this Muslim. And I don't get that logic, but Trump's language has, on some level, inspired that, and it's very unfortunate.
Have you seen a spiker in hecklers?
Extremely ignorant, and so they think that all Muslims wear hijab. And so I really admire Muslim women who choose to wear hijab because it's a choice, it's not required. So when women do make that choice, they're on the front line of the hate and violence right now. They're the most visible symbol to ignorant haters who think all Muslims look like Sikhs.
Now, comics in general have to deal with hecklers, and they develop all sorts of ways of getting back at them. But have you seen a spike in hecklers recently? Has it been more pointed, or are the people you're likely to attract to any shows you do people who would not exhibit that kind of bigotry?
I don't know about you, Athir. I just wrote an article for the Daily Beast that's going to come out next week about this very thing. In the time of Trump, comedians in New York clubs have been more heckled than we can remember from Trump supporters from others, usually other cities, other states.
And what are they saying?
Well, our friend Iman, who's a Muslim comedian, they yelled at her, don't make fun of Trump. And then when they found out she was Muslim, yelled, go back to your country. We don't want you Muslims here. Others have said, don't make fun of President Trump or give him a chance. And this is because Donald Trump's made fun of Saturday Night Live. Like George Bush laughed it off. But their leader, Donald Trump, has lashed out against comedians who have mocked him. So his followers are just emulating. They're just parroting what he says. And it's concerning. And I've had things in the audience. And I've said, look, in America, you can make fun of our president. That's part of our country. And I tell them nicely, if it really upsets you, move to Russia. Because then you can't make fun of the leader there. So enjoy Russia. But I think we really have to fight back. I'm really fearful comedians will self-censor. That's my concern.
On the other hand, is this giving you a lot of new material?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that as comedians, that's how we deal with and how we cope with things that are, you know, upsetting to us otherwise. So hearing someone heckle or say something like, go back to your country, just gives us more reason, more ammunition, comedic ammunition, if anyone's out there, to just make more jokes. So there's a wealth of material that Trump has given us.
What do you say when somebody says...
It's definitely given me more material, and I want to actually say something pro-Trump. There's so much material out there from Trump by himself, from his kids, Beavis and Butt Trump, that there is no reason for anyone anywhere to ever make fun of his 10-year-old son. We have so much material. There is, like, endless, terrifying material to make fun of and to get jokes from. So, like, that's my one pro-Trump thing I'll ever say is please leave the kid alone.
Didn't you do a set at the Republican National Convention?
I did.
Had you been invited?
And now I'm afraid that I probably helped in some way, which I can never forgive myself for.
But we did it. It was actually connected to the RNC, but not at the RNC. And it was actually the delegates who came were all anti-Trump Republican delegates.
Okay, I feel bad.
Because we were making fun of, you know, of Donald Trump, and they knew we were going to make fun. And as a comedian, you look at, I mean, I'm an optimist. If we go into internment camps, I'm hoping we get free Wi-Fi. You got to look at the silver lining and all this. I mean, and there's so many brown people in the camp. We will figure out a way to make Wi-Fi. There's so many South Asians and engineers in those camps. And part of it also, we missed President Obama. I mean, the audiences, I ask night after night, who misses President Obama? And if there was ever a time, I wish the expression, once you go black, you never go back, applied. It was to President Obama.
We have to take a little break, and we will come back with Dean Abdallah, Maysoon Zayid, and Athir Yaqub. We are talking about finding humor as a Muslim in the current political environment. Stay with us for more. We're back talking about finding humor in the current political situation, if you're a Muslim comedian, with Athir Yaqub, Maysoon Zayid, and Dean Abdallah. And have you gotten new jokes? What are some of the jokes that are getting the biggest laughs now, Athir?
Well, I've been talking about the Muslim registry, how there's already been a Muslim registry in the U.S. It's called a Costco membership because Muslims love to go there. But none of those people are a threat because, you know, if you're going to kill yourself, you're probably not going to shop in bulk. So that's one thing I've been talking about. Just talking about, I guess, how people have been trolling me online also. I haven't seen as much rise in like hecklers in person or like shows, but I've definitely noticed a lot more online. And I think because people, you know, feel safer hiding behind their computer and they can say anything they want without having the courage to come forward and say it to your face.
Tweeting is back in vogue.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. It is so strong. I mean, a lot of times I joke around now, one, about the Muslim ban, but also there was a poll of Trump supporters, and they asked them serious questions, and they asked them one as a joke. They didn't know it was a joke. They said, do you support bombing Aqaba? And 41% said yes. Now, Aqaba is the fictitious city where Aladdin is from. But to them, it's like, it sounds Arab. Blow it up. Paul Abdul, blow her up. Algebra, blow it up. I don't like it. Sounds Arab to me. So you've got to make fun. At the same time, I don't think all Trump supporters are bigots, and I say that, but I do think all bigots are Trump supporters. You don't have anyone who's like, I hate Muslims or black people, but that Jill Stein, I really like her recycling plan. That didn't happen. You went with Trump. So you have to call out the reality. We call out Trump, but, and again, I defend some of their supporters, some of economic issues. But there, to deny racism and bigotry played a role would be lying. It would be politically correct about a guy who hates political correctness.
I've been doing jokes about healthcare because I also have cerebral palsy, and a lot of people in the disabled community are freaking out right now. They're really worried about what's going to happen. So I was like, I have to be able to do a joke about Obamacare and ACA and the fact that so many Trump supporters didn't know that they were the same thing. So I do a joke about how whenever they have the realization, there's an actual website called areyousorryyet.com that documents tweets of people who supported Trump before and now hate him. And when they have that realization, I always laugh hysterically at them because they're going to die now. And then I stop laughing when I realize I am too.
You've said that people with disabilities are the largest minority in the world and we're the most underrepresented in entertainment.
Yes, we are. And the numbers are astonishing because the Ruderman Foundation did a study about this, and they found out that only 4% of all the speaking roles on television are disabled characters, and 95% of those are not played by disabled actors. So non-disabled actors are taking 95% of those 4%. So we're practically invisible.
The President Trump denies that he was making fun of disabled people when he did that imitation of a reporter.
Of course he does. Just like the passage from 1984, the book, you know, basically don't believe your eyes and ears, believe what Donald Trump says. That is the scariest thing. We have a dictatorship on some level trying to take shape there with those guys, which don't believe the media. The media is all bad. Just believe us. Steve Bannon said it yesterday. The media is the enemy. And that's really stunning.
He said the media are the opposition party,
which is the
not
enemy.
The Democrats.
Right. Which he doesn't want you to believe anyone but Donald Trump's lies. And we have to call Donald Trump out when he lies. I think it's important. People in the media, it's very, very important. And Bannon does not want you, and Donald Trump does not want you to believe the media, which fact checks. They want you to believe one person. And we're not going to do it. We're not going to believe the
and
Donald Trump.
He doesn't want you to believe your own eyes. So yeah. Anyone with a physical or intellectual disability at some point in their life has had a bully do exactly what Donald Trump did in front of us all. But that's the least of our problems right now. And we actually want people to stop associating disability with that one mockery and look at all the different ways he's targeting the disabled community. When you have someone like Betsy DeVos, who doesn't know what IDEA is, who doesn't understand that disabled students have a right to equal education, and she's being appointed as the education secretary. When you have a vote at 1:30 in the morning where they abolish protections against pre-existing conditions and we don't know what the replacement is, this community is being targeted. So him mocking Serge was absolutely disgusting and a bad role model for anyone in the world, but it's really the least of our problems.
Athea, you grew up in Alabama, didn't you?
I did, yes. Trump land.
Would that have been rougher than growing up in New York and New Jersey? The other two here are from New Jersey.
I think so. Although now I think growing up there has given me more insight what the rest of the country is going to look like with Trump. So I can walk you all through it. But this is not new to me, is getting like racist remarks. I remember like, you know, in high school, I was actually there during 9/11. We were watching the news. And I remember my teacher just being like, I bet it was those damn Arabs. And I was like a new student, like second week into school. And that's the first time it really hit me that I'm different and that people are going to look at me according to my religion. And, you know, I wasn't even religious, you know, and I knew that I was going to be targeted, but I've seen that happen over and over again.
Well, when people call you a Muslim comic, the implication is that you're religious. If I were to say a certain comedian was a Catholic comic or a Jewish comic, that would be because the material would have come out of their religious beliefs. But do you feel that you're labeled Muslim comic simply because of your names?
No, I think we all identify as Muslim. The level of religiosity is probably different between us. And there are some Muslim comedians who pray five times a day, who are our friends, who are very, very religious on that spectrum. Being Muslim is a big part of my identity. My connection to God, which is all Islam is about, is very strong. No, I was raised with Christianity and Islam. My mom is Italian. My dad's Palestinian. But as I got older, I gravitated more to Islam for various reasons. One theological, but one is, I think, honoring my father who passed away 15 years ago. But it's really about you and God. And my relationship with God is extremely important to me, and it's very strong. But it's not something... I talk about everything. I even make fun of parts of Islam on the stage, and that's because culturally what Muslims do about overusing the term inshallah, which means God willing, and using it in situations God wouldn't care, using it all the time. Like, I was at a restaurant. I asked the waiter, where's the bathroom? He goes, it is over there. I go, I'll be right back. He goes, inshallah. I'm like, what has happened in the bathroom? I need God's protection. So even when we're in the Middle East, and I've done that joke in Saudi Arabia. I've done that joke in Jordan, Egypt.
I've been to some of those bathrooms. Maybe they were.
So, I mean, the point is that Muslims will laugh at things when it's coming from us, like any other minority community. If you're African-American, you make fun of your own culture, everyone laughs at it. If you're a white racist making fun of African-Americans, it makes your spine go up because we know what you're really about.
And this ties right into the myth that, like, all Muslims are monolith, you know. Dean and I produce something called Muslim Funny Fest, and like you said, it varies from comic to comic. We have people who are Muslim in culture only, and then we have people who are completely devout. And the assumption is that all Muslims are 100% radical and devout and extreme, and if you're not, you're not Muslim. And it's just like any other faith. People do the best they can. They sin every day if they believe in sin, or they stay tied to it because it's cultural. And, you know, Dean, I've always taken total credit for steering you more towards Islam as an adult, but now that I know it was your dad, I'll honor that too.
Inshallah. My guests are Maysoon Saeed, Dean Abdallah, and Athir Yaqub, and we're talking about being a Muslim comic in the current situation. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, Dean and Maysoon, you're both from New Jersey.
Yes. The greatest state in America, by the way, Leonard, in case you didn't know that.
By far.
Did you grow up in an area where you felt welcome, unlike Alabama, or did you encounter any hostility there because of the religion?
I grew up in a town where there were two ethnic groups. You were either Italian or my father. It was very diverse. It was in Lodi, New Jersey, and then we moved to Paramus. Never an issue, though. I can't recall anyone being anything but embracing, frankly, and curious. In third grade, my teacher, this is completely serious, asked me to bring my father to school for show and tell to meet an Arab Muslim guy. And in today's climate, if you brought an Arab Muslim guy to speak at school, certain places, they'd be upset and saying, what are you trying to indoctrinate our kids? So that's how much things have changed. It went from a curiosity to now almost a fear of us when we're just trying to get to know them.
Earlier this week, WMIC reported that there's intense opposition to giving permits to a mosque in Bayonne.
Yeah.
Did that surprise you?
Maysoon, what about you? I'm not surprised. I've covered it.
I'm not surprised about it, but I think it's something very concerning to me. And again, Dean and I did this documentary called The Muslims Are Coming, where we went to the Deep South to places that objected to having houses of worship that were Islamic. And to see it here in New Jersey is really disheartening, but not surprising at all, because I grew up in Cliffside Park, New Jersey. It was all Italian Catholics, and then we were the only Palestinian Muslim family. And I was never ostracized or bullied, and my friends would take me at midnight Mass on Christmas Eve and show me off and say I was from where Jesus was from. And then this election, most of my friends actually voted for Trump, and I was shocked. I had no idea, because they were all closet supporters. So now that I know that I've been betrayed, nothing else that can happen will surprise me.
Well, were you and Dean among the thousands that Donald Trump said were cheering the destruction of the World Trade Center from the shores of New Jersey. He described New Jersey as having a heavy Arab population.
There was too much traffic for me to get there, I think, that day. Yeah, what about you, Mason?
I was watching General Hospital.
Yeah, I was probably shopping at the mall.
I wasn't able to partake in the cheering, no.
But, you know, Leonard, some of the problems, like in New Jersey, and that's not the only mosque controversy. There was two other big ones over there, and I wrote about them for the
Daily. And, of course, there was a controversy earlier about a proposed mosque down near the World Trade Center site.
But part of this is really that polls show most Americans don't know a Muslim. About 30 to 32% don't have a Muslim friend, have no connection.
So are you the first Muslim they think that they're meeting?
And sometimes, I mean, I have a show on SiriusXM Radio every day, and I open every day saying the same thing. I'm Dino Bidala, and I want to be your Muslim friend. And, you know, it's funny and cute, but there's a reason. Polls show if you know a Muslim, you tend to have a 20 to 25% more positive view of Islam and Muslims. Unless that Muslim is a jerk, then you don't like them. But I'm saying, assuming the Muslim is a good guy or a good woman, it makes the same sense. Same thing with the LGBT community or the Latino community, African Americans. If people know people from those communities, they tend to have a more positive view. That's why I can't speak for you guys, but I have no problem with them calling me a Muslim comedian, because I want them to know there are Muslims out there who look like me and look like us and speak like us and are part of the fabric of the United States of America, and that we love this country like they do, and they can't outlove me in this country. They can't go, I love this country. No, you're not going to win there, because I'm so grateful this country took my dad from Palestine and my grandparents from Sicily to let me grow up in this great country. So you're not going to outlove me in America when you're going to fight with me on this stuff.
My concern is that I had people who trusted my opinion and believed in me and my faith when I was telling them, you know, no, Obama's not a Muslim, and this is just them not wanting to say they hate him because he's black. I've seen that confidence undermined, and I've seen people who never questioned my Americanness or my faith or my intentions now wondering if I really do have the best intentions. I think that Donald Trump's effect has been a lot more than I ever imagined, because I'm talking about friends I've known since I was 5 years old who no longer believe I'm telling the truth.
Well, I'm going to ask all of you this. Did your family support you when you said that you wanted to become a professional comedian out there?
I'll tell you my mom's reaction, which I always tell this joke. She was like, I don't know how to tell your father you're doing the stand-in comedy. And I was like, Mom, I'm just telling jokes. It's not like I'm on stage stripping. And she's like, I know that. Strippers make money. So at first she wasn't the most supportive. Of course, that punchline was embellished a little bit. But that was before. That was the conversation. Like, how am I going to tell your dad you're doing this? Like a Muslim woman on stage, you know, just talking to strangers about God knows what. And I think now that she's seen my material, at least the one that I sent her, the Muslim proof one, she's proud that I'm up there and I'm talking about it and hopefully dispelling stereotypes about Muslims and females. And so especially a lot of my jokes are about her. I think she likes that, too.
But it can be a problem if you're a woman and you want to do jokes in the Islamic world. Maysoon, weren't you the first ever female comic to perform in Jordan?
They say that I'm the first ever comedian to do stand-up in Palestine and Jordan, but I always say never say first, because maybe there was someone in the 50s and no one documented it. But as far as we know, I am. And what makes me happy about that is that in America, they always say women aren't funny. And there I kind of got to set it up as a woman thing. So then when the guys started doing comedy, it was like cute. They were trying to be like the women.
And what did your parents say when you said, I want to make a living from this?
So I was a substitute teacher by day. I taught 7th and 8th grade reading and English at a Catholic school, and I was a comedian by night. And my parents thought it was just going to be a phase. But then I started making money hand over fist, and like most disabled people in America are unemployed, and so I was like raking in the dough and paying the taxes on like, you know, a certain POTUS. And they were just really, really happy that I was independent and that I was giving voice to a lot of issues that were important to them. You know, early in my career, I talked a lot about Palestine, Israel, about equality, and about, you know, being a Muslim girl. And they were really happy about the stuff that I was doing. It would be a lie to say that they wouldn't rather have me be a lawyer, but since I failed at that, they're pretty proud of me for this.
And Dean?
Well, I don't think any parent is going to be ecstatic when their kid comes up and says, hey, Mom and Dad, I want to be a comedian. I don't care where you're from. I don't care if you're immigrant, if you're here for 10 generations. That's not something you tend to hear, because the uncertainty and the concern for your kid living this life, traveling, you're out the nights, who knows what happens.
But it does it depend on how funny you were when you were growing up?
Well, on some level, but I don't think to be a professional comedian there's any connection between those two things. Stand-up comedy is its own communication skill set that you have to develop. It's actually an unnatural, artificial one on some level. Although the truth, the jokes are organically truthful, hopefully. But I used to be a lawyer, and I told my parents I want to be a page at NBC, so I quit being a lawyer to make 10 bucks an hour to get coffee for people. And it's what I want to do because I wanted to be in comedy.
We don't have much more time, but it's interesting that our next guest is Asghar Farhadi, director of a film called The Salesman, which is up for a Foreign Language Academy Award. Taraneh Al-Dusti, the actress who co-stars in the film, announced yesterday that she'll boycott the Oscars ceremony to protest President Trump's announcement that he would issue a temporary ban on visas to citizens from 7 predominantly Muslim countries.
I think that's a great gesture, and I think you're going to see more artists. We are all part of the resistance, and that's what we believe it. And for us, it's comedy resistance. It's punchlines to have Donald Trump make America laugh again at him. And if you're an artist, use your skill set. If you're in anywhere, use your skill set to resist Donald Trump's attempts to turn hate into policy. And that's what the whole Muslim ban and visa ban's about. It's turning hate to policy.
And use your platform and your position to, you know, talk about these issues, because everyone, you know, these minorities are underrepresented. So we need somebody who's in a position where they can talk about it and people will listen to do more of that and be vocal and active about it.
My great thanks.
Finish.
Very quickly.
There's never a wrong time to fight for equality. So this theory that, no, that's not the appropriate place, or a football game's not the appropriate place, there's never, ever a wrong place to fight for equality.
I have to leave it there, Maysoon. Zaid, Athiya Yaqub, and Dean Abdallah, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.